This one goes out to Walter Mitty. He knows why.
Ground control to Major Tom. Can you hear me, Major Tom?
Did you pass out or?
No, I just like zoned out for a second.
Oh, okay. Do you do that a lot?
Normal amount, I guess.
Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on.
Welcome to Now Playing Podcast's review of The Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
It's like Indiana Jones decided to become the lead singer of the Strokes or something like that. Nuts, I know.
A patron exclusive review chosen by Matthew McNellis.
Thank you for such a wonderful life.
Hosted by Jacob.
God, you're noteworthy.
Arnie.
You know who looks good in a beard? Dumbledore, not you.
And Stuart.
Alphon, he's old school. And may God's
love be with you. This podcast is spoiler-filled and contains harsh language. Listener discretion is advised.
Oh, is that my quintessence?
We hope you enjoy the show.
I guess to start back from the beginning.
This is Ground Control to Major Tom.
Today, we're discussing The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, starring Ben Stiller, Kristen Wiig, Shirley MacLaine, Adam Scott, Katherine Hahn, and Sean Penn, directed by Ben Stiller. This is Arnie, co-host of Now Playing, likes, podcasting, and Stephen King novels, dislikes, Dolph Lundgren movies, and my sister.
And Stuart.
And this is Jacob, the co-host who looks better in a beard than Dumbledore.
Well, there's no doubt about it. Walter Mitty is a classic. When you're talking about the 1939 short story, or maybe when you're talking about the 1947 Danny Kaye movie, but Secret Life of Walter Mitty, the movie that came out from Fox Studios at Christmas 2013, I don't think anyone ever called it a classic. Why are we here to discuss it?
We are here because Matthew McNellis has picked this movie. He is a longtime listener. I recognize his email address from years, and he picked this. It was between this or Clerks 2, just to hear Stuart have to review that movie.
Oh, boy.
Ouch. I've seen it, because I know what I would say.
This may have been the mercy, then.
Yeah.
If those were the options.
What he said was, he really connected with this movie and encouraged friends and family to watch it also. And nobody's had the same reaction he's had, but he's wondering what kind of reaction we have to it. Also, it takes us a while to get to some of these patron picks. We're behind a little bit. And he said when he picked it, we were in the heart of the initial COVID lockdowns, and having a travel log was very comforting during that period.
Yeah, we had to live a rich fantasy life then to be able to imagine ourselves getting outside the house.
That makes sense.
So they've made this before. I'm familiar with the short story. I had to read that in school and probably write a paper about it.
Right.
Everyone did, right? That's a very, I think it's one of the most published short stories of all time.
And it's one that has stuck with me because I remember like when I was in college and trying to write a lot, like I would fall into this trap. Like, I'm like, oh, I'm just writing The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, where you try to merge like fantasy and reality and what's real and what's not. I'm like, everything I'm writing is a variation of Walter Mitty. Like I like really got stuck for a time realizing that and not having to come up with something else.
And it's really short. Arnie, have you ever read it? It's only like 3 or 4 pages.
Yeah, you say famous short story. I've never heard of the short story. I've never heard of the original movie. When this came out, I literally kept thinking it was The Secret Life of Walter Matthau. I knew nothing about this.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, you know it's an old short story, Walter Mitty. Who's got that name anymore?
Yeah, no, I think Walter Mitty, that had entered the pop culture phenomenon. Like, people know what that name is. If you have an English class, I'm really surprised, Arnie, because like, yeah, every English teacher makes their students, at least in my day, I thought that you had to read this one.
You're the same day as Arnie.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Remember, I read The Scarlet Pimpernel instead of The Scarlet Letter. My Florida curriculum was very different.
It's true. Your curriculum was all weird. I read it again just for this. And yes, it is mostly about a suburban married man who's driving his wife into town for a shopping trip and fantasizing. Everything is a trigger for him to imagine that he's doing something much more bold and heroic than he actually is doing. I think that there is in there, I was trying to think, it was published in 1939. There seemed to be a little bit of a social critique on America and maybe the stance of the war. Because this character is always imagining himself fighting Germans, flying planes, riding in boats, and by the end of it, like standing up to the firing squad, it's about an American who sees himself doing all of this action, but in fact is doing mundane things for himself and his wife. I think that it would have been read in its day as a commentary about the fact that America had not gotten involved in World War II, would not for another year and a half from the publication of this in 1939 in the New Yorker.
And it's also a much quicker read than Don Quixote, Man of La Mancha.
Yeah, it is like that.
Crazy old man seeing windmills as giants. Like, yeah, it has that same vibe, but like you said, four pages or something.
I think what people like maybe more associated with is the 1947, like about 10 years later, after World War II, the popular song and dance man Danny Kaye embodied the character. I have been saying the whole time it was a Don Knotts vehicle, but I was confusing it with the Incredible Mr. Limpet. I don't know if you remember that one.
Where he turns into a fish, a cartoon fish.
Yeah, where he turns into a fish. I thought I had seen this movie, and then when I rented the movie, I was like, oh, I have not seen this movie. But it is essentially the short story extrapolated into the idea of what if a daydreamer does actually fall into like a Hitchcock thriller, and suddenly there are Nazis wanting, you know, jeweled tiaras, and his fantasy life is blurring with this espionage storyline.
I saw that movie. It was called Cloak and Dagger. It had Dabney Coleman. I love it.
Okay. It's a little different, a little more Atari there, but yeah, and it's kind of a musical too. I mean, again, it's definitely a product of its time. I didn't really love it, but I can see why it would be popular in 1947.
Did you see this movie when it came out then?
I absolutely did. I was working at Fox at the time, and they had a very special screening with Ben Stiller there.
Oh.
It was a Q&A. I sat about 5 feet away from him and watched the movie and then had him come out to answer all of our questions.
I want to hear about all the questions you had.
I had none. I didn't want to ask anything.
I got so many.
Here's the thing. They really touted this like this was going to be an Oscar contender. The way that they, again, the fact that he was there and we were pushing it and the way that like we received like handouts and all of that, like they really wanted us to think this was going to be Fox's Oscar bait for that year. And keep in mind, this is the year that 12 Years a Slave wins and, you know, Gravity's in the mix, The Revenant and all of that. Like, yeah, this movie did make money. It did do about $200 million. But, like, I don't think that it had much impact. Like, I didn't think much about it after I saw it, and I didn't know anybody that ever talked about it again.
Yeah, it feels like they thought they had Forrest Gump on their hands. That's the vibe I get from this movie, is very Gumpian.
Yeah, that's a good comparative.
And I did see this eventually when it came out on DVD, and I could get it from Netflix on disc back in the day. Because, yeah, it, like the trailers, it might be visually interesting. Like, there might be something to it. I wasn't going to go see it in theaters, but I was curious. And Stuart, you say, what impact did this have? Like, my wife's like, oh, what do you got to watch? Secret Life of Walter Mitty. She's like, oh, that's the film with all the great music in it. Like, she loves Jose Gonzalez, who does like four or five songs in this. Like, that's all she knew about this movie was the music. Arcade Fire, all that.
Yep, I agree. So we're talking about this as a Ben Stiller comedic vehicle. I feel like most people have an impression about who he is that is very different than me. I have not seen Night at the Museum movies. I have not seen Meet the Parents movies. I didn't until a few years ago see There's Something About Mary.
Tropic Thunder?
I did see that one. I was taken to that one. But by and large, I don't feel like I know Ben Stiller as a mainstream comedic figure. I see the quirky ones, the smaller films, and kind of some of his directing effort. It's interesting to note that he's here both in front of the camera and behind. I'm one of the few people that will stand up for and say I like The Cable Guy. I actually thought that was a pretty smart social satire about telecommunications stalking you like some 90s thriller.
I feel like The Cable Guy is a false hill to die on, because I've only met people who like that movie and say, I'm one of the few who like The Cable Guy. I have yet to find somebody who dislikes The Cable Guy, so...
Oh, really? Okay.
But yeah, they've either forgotten about it or they're hardcore fans, it feels like.
Yeah.
Okay, it was a much-hated movie when it was released, and it slowed the trajectory of Jim Carrey taking over the world. But yeah, I mean, I think that Ben Stiller has become a very credible director. He did a great TV miniseries Escape from Dannemora. I don't know if you guys saw that, with Patricia Arquette as a woman that helped two prisoners break out of a New York penitentiary.
He's worked with Patricia Arquette recently, if you've seen Severance on Apple TV, and Adam Scott, who's going to show up in this. He's directed that and really enjoyed the first season. Like, who knows, it could go the way of Twin Peaks season 2 or The Return, but if you like just really bizarre David Lynchian stuff, check out Severance.
Yeah, I've been watching. I've seen a few episodes. I'm digging it.
Yeah, I forget you guys haven't reviewed Ben Stiller on Now Playing before. I and Marjorie reviewed Tropic Thunder way back when, and Brock and Alicia reviewed Madagascar 2 way back
Does he do a voice of that?
Yeah, these are the kinds of things I don't even know when they come out.
Yeah, I will agree, though, Stuart, that when I think of Ben Stiller, it's more of his big comedies that, you know, get the big crowds. Night at the Museum, yeah, I've seen him because I got kids. But yeah, Meet the Parents, Tropic Thunder, those are the big ones.
Zoolander, I've never seen a Zoolander movie.
Oh, Zoolander, oof, I forgot, bad.
See, I've been a Ben Stiller fan for 32 years. I discovered him on The Ben Stiller Show on MTV in 1990.
Okay.
And I still remember those sketches. Like, in my head, I'll be driving and remember one. My favorite one is where he's making fun of Achtung Baby and he's singing One, but it's an ad for Lucky Charms. It's like, one box, one bowl. It's just, I loved that show with Janine Garofalo and everybody there on it.
Yeah, I mean, we're all the same Gen X. Like, they were all, like, big players, yeah.
Yeah, and then as an actor, I'd watch a lot of stuff with him in it, but I think I probably became a big fan with Something About Mary. I looked and my favorite films he's been in are Something About Mary, Tropic Thunder, the first Meet the Parents, but quite clearly not the second and certainly not the third, Zero Effect, which I put in the book, and Mystery Men, which is in the book.
Ah, that's right, Mystery Men, yeah.
Okay, Zero Effect is what I'm talking about, the small ones. Zero Effect, Flirting with Disaster, the movie he made a few years ago with Adam Driver. Like, I feel like he makes really smart, small films, and then he has this whole other career that I don't know about. And this movie looked like it tried to span the bridge between the two. It is a big, expensive special effects extravaganza, taking a popular character from literature and bringing him back in the 21st century, but doing it in a way that, again, what I remembered about this movie when I heard that we were going to put it on the schedule, beautiful looking, so artistic, so much money, and just had a different feel to it than you would expect on a mainstream comedy. But the messaging, the story of it, I remember struggling with it with my one and only viewing. I wondered what it would be like to come back almost 10 years later.
And I've never seen this film. When it came out in theaters, the ads kind of appealed to me, sort of like that Marwin film that came out with all the action figures. You know, there's like, there's something about it that looks like it could be interesting, but not interesting enough for me to actually remember this movie exists beyond the trailer. At one point when this was streaming, I did turn it on with Marjorie. I'm like, we have nothing else to watch. We both like Ben Stiller a lot. Let's give this movie a try. I saw Kristen Wiig and I turned the damn thing off. I'm like, I'm not going to watch this movie with Kristen Wiig.
I knew it. I knew it.
I just, nope.
Wow.
Only thing worse is if Melissa McCarthy showed up.
Oh, God, yeah. Brock could be sitting here reviewing it with you two if they had both win this movie.
Someday we'll do Bridesmaids just for you, Arnie.
Recommend, but that's a different story. But yeah, so this is my first time. I am a complete newbie to the entire Walter Mitty phenomena.
Okay. All right. Well, then let's get started. Why don't you give us the plot? We'll find out what Walter Mitty is doing in 2013.
Ben Stiller is Walter Mitty. Walter works at Life magazine sorting photo negatives, but the irony is, Walter has no life of his own. Instead, Walter has a vivid imagination of having grand, big-budget movie-style adventures. Many of these fantasies include Walter's crush, his co-worker Cheryl, played by Kristen Wiig. But Walter is so timid he can't bring himself to even send Cheryl a wink on eHarmony. When Life magazine is bought to be downsized and made online only, famed, mysterious photographer Sean O'Connell sends what he calls the quintessence of life that must be used for the cover of Life's final issue. The problem is, Walter can't find the negative for this mysterious picture. O'Connell sent a goodbye gift, a wallet, for Walter, though the two had never met face to face. And with the wallet, the photographer sent a slew of other negatives, but this specific negative 25 is missing. So Walter leaves his comfort zone and travels the globe searching for the legendary O'Connell. Walter follows information of O'Connell's last known whereabouts, and Walter ends up traveling to Iceland, Greenland, the Himalayas, and more, doing things he'd never have done before, such as jumping out of a helicopter into freezing waters, walking over mountain ranges alone, and through it, he finds the self-confidence he's lacked his entire life. And he eats at Papa John's. Finally, Walter meets up with O'Connell, played by Sean Penn, and O'Connell reveals the negative was in the wallet that had been given to Walter, but Walter had never opened up the wallet to look inside. Walter turns in the picture to the new management team, but never looks at the photo. And he also asks out Cheryl, who agrees. Together, Cheryl and Walter see the final issue of Life, and the magazine cover is a long lens photo of Walter sitting outside the Time Life building, examining photos. Walter and Cheryl walk together hand in hand as credits roll.
What a difference 9 years makes. eHarmony. Like, do people still use that? It's just Tinder or Grindr. Like, that's the new updated version of Walter Mitty.
I think people who are looking for more than a hookup, I think our generation still uses eHarmony. I think we'd feel like old people if we went on Tinder or Grindr.
And Walter Mitty is turning 42. At the beginning of this movie, we see him alone in his apartment, balancing his checkbook with pen and calculator. Like, really old school here.
I haven't done that for decades.
The fact that he's even got a computer to go online and try online dating is pretty progressive for this guy.
Yeah, we go from this pretty much into the opening credits, and I like the visual style, the way they, like, just place the credits around New York City. It's, like, non-obtrusive.
They're so tiny. I hate small opening title sequences. I love big fonts on the screen when you got a title. This one, it's so small and hidden. You'd almost miss it.
I'm just going to say right out loud, like, what I remembered is true. This movie is gorgeous looking.
Yeah.
It was photographed by Stuart Dreiberg, who I think won an Oscar for The Piano. He made Once for Warriors. He does a lot of things down under and really captures nature in a really spectacular grandeur way. But even here in the beginning, like the way that he captures corporate life, the fact that this guy is going to wear this suit and head off to a dark room and spend his days holed away from other people. Visually, the story is told very well.
And I thought that this movie coming in would be more about his fantasies. I mean, it's called The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. And so I really thought that, like, this would be a lot of things going on in his head. But we really only get that at the very beginning. He's talking on the phone. Patton Oswalt, his very identifiable voice as the eHarmony guy who goes above and beyond for customer service.
Yeah, try to help him get that great profile.
That's the best ad for eHarmony right there. But he has this fantasy about leaping off of the subway platform into an apartment building that's about to explode and rescuing this three-legged dog.
And even building him a fourth robotic leg. Like, yes, I think what people associate, if you know the name Walter Mitty, you associate it with daydream. You associate it with someone that lives a very rich interior life, but has nothing to show for it externally. And so to see a guy who, 42, doesn't have a woman, is spending all his money trying to get his mom into a nursing home, a mama's boy that just, again, looks at other people's photographs, other people's journeys, you get that he's the ultimate passive character.
Yeah, I'll say this with Walter, like, they'll give us some backstory much later on in the film. I wish I knew something more up front, because he's kind of just a crazy guy that daydreams and ignores people, and, like, why do I care about his journey? Like, they'll try to humanize him later, and it's kind of a nice little backstory. It's Oscar bait worthy, the details they give him, but I just wish I had something more to care about him at the beginning. He just seems like a loser, and, like, what is your redeeming quality? Like, that's something you need to give up. You could be bad at life, but you gotta have one redeeming thing.
It feels like an Adam Sandler character to me. Am I wrong in feeling that way?
Yeah.
I mean, abstractly, I think you're correct. Adam Sandler, unless this is his one good movie he does every 20 years, yeah, would be awful.
The only Adam Sandler movie it reminds me of is that one that's Jacob, you picked for the book.
Punch Drunk Love, one of his good movies.
Punch Drunk Love. It is not like any other Adam Sandler movie.
I mean, he does live in a different world than the rest of us. Like,
yeah, he is sort of this weirdo that, like...
Man-child.
Yeah, man-child. And that's definitely what's being played on here, is that we're to have empathy for him because he so badly wants to interact, and he already knows the girl he wants to be with. He gets on eHarmony to stalk her. And again, he has such hand-wringing about, do I even send her a wink? And then it doesn't even go right. So again, I think that's what's supposed to be endearing about him, is that he's just not a modern guy.
I also think that there's just presumed empathy, though. It's Ben Stiller. People have liked Ben Stiller for 20 years on screen at this point, since Reality Bites. I think that because it's Ben Stiller, even though it's Ben Stiller directing himself and giving this as a gimme, but I think that you're bringing baggage of previous Ben Stiller roles where he often plays, you know, a little bit of a loser, a little bit frustrated, a little bit neurotic, and so you could go with it more.
Yeah, and Zoolander, he perfected a lot of looks, the blue steel, but I feel like Ben Stiller has a look, like kind of this sad sack, everyday common man look that he pulls off in a lot of these. And yeah, I agree with you, Arnie. It's, if you go along with that version of Ben Stiller, then maybe you'll feel something for him here.
Yeah, okay, so I'm hearing... You guys are not.
I'm not won over by this character. Like, why do I want to go on his journey? And because I know the short story, I'm like, is this going to be 2 hours of delusions?
Yeah, I guess what I would say is when we get this opening leap off of the train platform and into an invented life of saving Cheryl's three-legged dog, the first thing I thought of was Scott Pilgrim, a movie, Arnie, that you call among your very favorite.
You said you guys. I'm... with this guy in these early scenes. I don't necessarily feel this has the fantastic realism of Scott Pilgrim, but because his first act, and this is trite, I know I've read Save the Cat, but his first act is save the dog. That's a great way to instantly prove this guy's a nice guy. He saved an animal and he went in and he's a sad sack. And the fact that he's going into the office in the first 15 minutes of this film, there's 20 reasons to pity this guy, not the least of which is he's going to lose his job, and he daydreams, and when he does, he stands there catatonic, so everybody knows it's happening. I'm kind of going with this guy a little bit. I'm interested to see what's going to happen beyond his crazy fantasies.
I mean, you bring up like Scott Pilgrim, Edgar Wright, a very visual director, and look, they're going for the Oscar for this. When we go to Greenland and Iceland and Afghanistan, like beautiful, beautiful scenery, the Himalayas, all that looks great. For this fantasy stuff, why isn't this Spike Jonze or Michel Gondry, like someone that really take this fantastical stuff? It's very boilerplate special effects, and maybe they're going for a big action movie type thing. I would have liked that to be more stylized.
I think that's the reference points. I think for Ben Stiller, he is trying to be Spike Jonze, Michel Gondry. He is trying to make a Charlie Kaufman movie. What does Walter Mitty mean in this day and age? Doesn't he represent? I mean, I think what we're really to get here is that we're all, as we move on to the online world, having less and less face-to-face encounters. I think that Walter Mitty is supposed to be identifiable because we can recognize in ourselves that we are living more in a cyber reality than actually going out into the world.
Yeah, I agree. That's completely the motif. Don't you wish they didn't say it outright? Hey, we hate those damn Instagrammers in the last scenes of the movie.
I didn't hear that. I didn't hear hate towards anybody.
Oh, it's there. It is there in Sean Penn's speech. But we'll get there.
All right.
But we'll find out that Walter works for Life magazine. Like, did that really go out of business in 2013? Like, I haven't thought about Life in a very long time.
It actually had been canceled twice by this point. It went out of print, went back in print, and then went back out of print by this point. But I like, all right, I kind of like the metaphor, you know, that he works at Life. It's so much about Life. There's the whole Life motto on the wall: to see the world, things dangerous to come to.
Oh, we're gonna see it plastered across the screen too many times.
To see behind walls, to draw closer, to find each other and to feel. That is the purpose of life. And yes, I do feel this movie is a little too blatant in literally putting these words everywhere. And the fact that a guy with no life works at Life, it's like too clever by half. but I'm still going with it. I'm almost turning on the films for schmaltz, and then I come back around when I find out they're all getting downsized, and this has a up-in-the-air kind of feel to it for me. They came out, you know, within a few years of this.
Right.
Yeah. There's a couple of fantasies, and the next fantasy that Walter Mitty has is when he finally gets to work, he's meeting the transition officer, who has this really annoying Abe Lincoln beard, and who is, like, smugly saying, I already know who's going to make the cut and who isn't. And Walter Mitty in the elevator, he can't even articulate. He's so bad at communication, he can't even say what he does. And so you just know he's going to be on the chopping block. But his fantasy is that he gets to tell this guy off and tell his beard off as well.
Yeah, that beard is the worst fake beard ever. I like Adam Scott as an actor. I primarily know him from Parks and Rec and then have seen him in a bunch of stuff since. But that pasted on beard is tragic.
It is. It's so bad. For some reason, he's like in Step Brothers as well. If you saw that, he plays this real big douche and he's very good at it, which is such the opposite of what he's done on TV with like Parks and Rec. But like, this is one fantasy that I can identify with this. I have played this scenario out very many times in my head when interacting with a manager or supervisor. There was one time I did lose it and told a district manager off. It felt good.
But what's interesting, you look around the office and other guys are growing that beard.
Yeah.
People are sucking up. The general feeling is, oh, we have to compete. We have to say, you know, like that we're worth it. You know, it happens in any job. You can see the people that are kiss ass. And yeah, this guy, Walter Mitty, not only is he not a kiss ass, but he's really screwed up. He is in possession of the roll of film from their star photojournalist, and the best photo that man has said he's ever taken is missing when they unfurl the film.
And it's obviously in the wallet he also sent. Like, I knew that the first time I saw this movie. I knew it this time watching it. Like, it's obviously in the wallet.
Yeah, I feel like I knew that always. Yeah.
I went totally the other way. You know what I thought? The best picture is no picture.
That's what they go for at the end.
The emptiness is everything. I thought he intentionally didn't send 25 because 25 should be blank and like the last cover of life should just be negative space.
Well, Arnie, you're kind of half right. The picture could not be in there right now. It could not, because the moment that will be taken is when Walter Mitty goes out to the fountain and is looking at the proofs. That hasn't happened yet.
No, but it's in the wallet. It's when he was looking at different proofs, and the key to that is the glasses, because when he's looking at the proofs outside, he's wearing special glasses that have, like, double lenses. And in the photo, he does not have the double lenses on. He's looking at different photos. That photo was in his wallet the whole time.
We'll also find out that Sean was talking to his mom to find out where he will be. What is his work schedule before these negatives were sent? So he was already planning this.
No, but there's no photo in that wallet.
Yeah, there is.
At that moment, if he were to open up his wallet, it would not be there because that moment has not happened.
No, it's there because it's there later. Where are you getting this?
Because we will see in this film him go out and holding up those proofs exactly in that way. And the photo is taken as if hiding, as if sneaking it on him.
It is, but it was snuck before the film ever started.
No, it is not.
Yes, I'll die on this hill.
Yes. No, I'm Team Arnie here.
I will die with you on this hill. He put that photo in later when he goes to visit the mom who is living with Walter Mitty.
No, he went to the mom before that.
He didn't even throw away the wallet at that point. The mom didn't have the wallet when O'Connor went to visit her.
Yeah, before Sean goes to Iceland or any of that, he visited the mom. He had to get the cake so he could give it to the warlords. And we're going to see that warlord clue in Iceland. Like, this was all planned out before.
Yes, it is an elaborate plan.
He didn't throw away the wallet until after he had already gone to Iceland and Greenland. So the mom was only in possession of the wallet.
It's a small quibble. The point is that Sean has the capacity to call the cover of the last printed copy of Life magazine, and he's already chosen Walter Mitty, the guy in the shadows, the man that lives in the dark room, the one that has made sure all of his photos from around the world, the life that has been captured by Sean, has only gotten to people mediated because of this man choosing to live in the dark room, and he wants to celebrate him in the last cover. But yes, what has happened is that he has been left a game. This photojournalist wants this man that has supported him to live a little bit of the life that he's enjoyed. And so he has contrived a reason for this man to step out of the dark room and go have an adventure. That is what the story is.
And I just want to say I'm Team Arnie. Like, that negative was always in that wallet, but I do feel like that's what they were trying to go for, that Sean, the photographer, is trying to push him out into the world.
Is it, though, or is it that this is Mitty being self-determining? Because I get complete shock out of O'Connell when Mitty shows up at the end. I don't think he ever thought Mitty had it in him to do this.
Like, I'll just put it this way. If we found out that O'Connell didn't exist and Mitty was the photographer the whole time, like, it wouldn't have surprised me. Like, it really feels like that kind of sentimental, magical realism, Oscar Beatty film.
Yes, agreed.
Well, let's hold the end of the film until now. Again, I just want to cite very good casting. If you're going to try to find a pretentious photojournalist who is really taking the burdens of the world to heart and is really trying to save everyone, Sean Penn as an actor and an activist, I think is a really, you know, you forget that he can be in comedies because he does so many heart-wrenching dramas. And I do think that he totally works here as this inspiring photojournalist who needs and wants to help Walter Mitty.
Do you feel like there was tension on the set between Stiller and Penn because Stiller basically made fun of I Am Sam in Tropic Thunder? Like,
no, I mean, I think Sean Penn knows he shouldn't have gone full retard.
Yeah, I think Sean Penn has a sense of humor about certain roles.
Do you? Sean Penn and sense of humor do not go together for me.
Yeah, I remember him. Sean Penn has been on Saturday Night Live and made fun of, like, casualties of war and some of his more pretentious moments. Yeah, I do. I think he's capable of it. But the fact that he's so self-serious, you believe that he could be this war-torn photographer.
Yeah, you say great casting. I guess I agree because I see Sean Penn. I'm like, what political speech is he going to give me during this film?
Really? You don't like Sean Penn?
On the nose casting for sure if you're going for pretentious artist.
Yeah. Like so much of this film on the nose.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I guess. But you guys make it sound like a crime that they want people to understand the theme. I don't think it's always wrong to be obvious. Like, yes, he works at the Life magazine. He's trying to learn about life. I don't have a problem with it. Like, yes, it's overt.
No, yeah, that's fine to be obvious. Just don't tell me you're an Oscar film if you're going to be this obvious.
Well, I mean, there's more subtle. Like, I really like the moment where he's looking around the office. I mean, the real clue is, like, he sees a Life magazine photo of Peter Sellers. And I go, ah, yes, this does remind me of being there or some of those other. This is like a Peter Sellers movie from the past brought to life, which, you know, I think is an interesting take. And this is also where he's falling in love with apparently Arnie's least favorite actress of all time.
Second least.
Can I just one more time? I know that she's not funny to you, but the contempt that you have, I don't understand.
I actively dislike her persona.
Which is
awkward, high-voiced. I mean, I watched her for years and years on SNL against my will because my wife watches every episode of SNL. So it's like our Sunday morning thing is we watch SNL. And I've seen every episode of SNL with her in it. And she became one of those superstars of SNL who took it over. Like, she was every sketch because people loved her for reasons. Her and Will Ferrell. And by the end of SNL, I couldn't stand either of them. But then Will Ferrell went off and did some interesting things on film, whereas Kristen Wiig went to film and did the exact same persona. You watch Knocked Up, she's playing herself.
Okay.
There are so many movies where she's playing herself, and I don't like her. And so I don't like her playing herself, or at least this persona that appears to be herself.
We don't know her. We don't know who she is. I've seen her give different varied performances. Nasty Baby is not Bridesmaids, but yes, you have to Skeleton Twins. She has done acting work, but you're right. I haven't watched every sketch she ever did, so I don't have that in my head.
But can I just say, she's great in this movie.
Right.
She is not playing herself. She shows it a little bit. Later on when she's playing the guitar, it grates on me. I'm like, oh, there it is. There's this Kristen Wiig I hate. But for the rest of this movie, she keeps that in check. She plays a human being instead of that caricature she loves to play in Ghostbusters and things, and even Wonder Woman 84. And so, no, she's really good in this movie. I shouldn't have turned it off because of her back then.
Yeah. Okay, good. I agree. The third fantasy we get in 10 minutes is the fact that Walter Mitty imagines coming to her as a rugged Latin adventurer. He believes that because of what she said on her eHarmony page, he needs to be the rugged outdoor type in order to impress her. And so that's the fantasy, is that ice in his beard, he's going to be able to swoop her off her feet, although when they actually meet, it's awkward, and in the ways that you seem to describe her persona.
That shot of him with the snow in his beard and everything feels like almost an outtake from Tropic Thunder, where his action star Tug Speedman was standing in the mountains with the snow and the baby strapped and the baby Bjorn on his chest. I do feel like he's replaying some bits of Tropic Thunder with his fantasies here.
That movie in and of itself is an elaborate joke on Hollywood projections and star ego and all of that. Yeah, I do think that media always, from Cable Guy, Severance, this movie, he's always thinking about, I mean, he grew up in show business, so it only makes sense that that's a theme here.
Yeah, Reality Bites, not so much.
Never saw it.
Oh, it's pretty good.
Is the humor working for you? Because it feels very uneven to me. Like, this doesn't feel like it should be a comedy, and yet there's some scenes that are very broad comedy. Especially the scene with Adam Scott as Ted Hendricks and Walter Mitty in the elevator. With he has a Stretch Armstrong, and they're calling it Jelly Man because that's funny to say Jelly Man, I guess, the words. But it doesn't feel like it should be that kind of comedy when this whole thing breaks out. And I know some of this is fantasy, but again, what is the tone of this film? Is it ponderous? Is it Oscar bait? Is it Meet the Parents?
It's uneven. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah, it definitely wants to be all of it. For the most part, I believe it wants to avoid the typical, what I'm imagining, is the typical Ben Stiller comedy and prove that he has a deeper, more resonant, more serious. Again, Peter Sellers. I think of that as someone that he played broad slapstick in many of his films, but then did something like Being There, where it was a really internal performance, very quiet, still magical realist, still fantasy, still in keeping with his persona, but it showed a new dimension.
But not surfing down the asphalt on imaginary skis.
Right, yeah. So every comedian wants to be taken seriously, but what you're talking about is the stuff that you have to put in if you're calling it Walter Mitty. You have to have big, elaborate fantasies because that is what the character means. If you're going to use the name, you have to say that they're not going to just fight. It's going to be this, yeah, like they take what, skateboards or what are they using as the skis?
Cement. Just big chunks of cement.
Cement skis to ski down the cement.
Is it really?
Yeah, yes.
It is, Stuart.
I thought they grabbed something from the newspaper.
They used, like, some posts as ski poles, but they're on just chunks of cement.
Okay, yeah, you're right. And so, yes, again, this is where I hold up, like, Scott Pilgrim, right? This is just, we're going to just suddenly be in this big, loud, gregarious vision, and I'm hearing this is a part that nobody here really likes that much.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is Ben Stiller, he's done directorial work that I've enjoyed. Maybe not an action director. Maybe not a big special effects director. Again, get Michel Gondry to do something with practical effects or get Edgar Wright that is a visual director. It is not Ben Stiller. I don't think this stuff looks good, which is fine. It's 2013 CGI. It's always going to look dated the further we get from it. But to me, it's just silly. This is what a 42-year-old... Look, I spend a lot of time daydreaming. I don't imagine skiing down the street after my boss. This seems like a weird fantasy.
All right, I'll admit I do have fantasies in similar veins, never skiing on cement, but action hero fantasies from time to time.
I mean, when I'm stuck in LA traffic, I imagine that my car can fly and I could just get past it all.
But I don't have a problem with the direction. They may not have the money for these. My question is, are we going to get something else? Because I feel like all the fantasies, while they're about different things, tell me the same thing over and over. This is a sad sack who's afraid to do anything and yet has huge fantasies. This movie couldn't get to the half hour mark fast enough because I feel like it made its point clearly by 15 minutes.
It is a lot of setup. Yeah, this is a longer than most Act One. They have to spend so much time telling us who Walter Mitty is. We haven't even talked about his sister and the Clementine cake and the mom and their piano. There's so much that they have to do before they're going to set this character free to find himself. It feels overstuffed in the beginning. It's unfortunate that they have to spend so much time. I guess what I'm really saying is, does this need to be Walter Mitty? Do we really need these fantasy scenes that are really slowing down everything and aren't that funny and maybe aren't visually that impressive in a movie that is otherwise very visually impressive? Some of these special effect shots, you can see the seams. So I just feel like the Walter Mittiness of it is the mistake. We shouldn't be having all this daydreaming.
Yeah, because you're going to have this scene where he's with Cheryl and Cheryl's son, and he's actually doing skateboarding tricks. Cheryl's not seeing it, but that is not imaginary. And look, just give me the story about a 17-year-old kid that had a backpack, but then his dad died, and he had to shave his mohawk off and be a serious businessman to help support his family, and he didn't get to live his life. There you go. I don't need the fantasies.
The problem with the fantasies for me is that I expected the movie to be more about them. It's called The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, and that secret life, as sold in the trailers and the first 30 minutes of this film, is the life he lives in his head. Nobody knows about it. It's the secret. So when the movie takes its turn that we're just about to get to, the fantasies pretty much disappear immediately, leading me to believe that the whole movie was going to turn out to be a fantasy. Like, this whole movie was going to be one elongated dream sequence during which Ben Stiller was catatonic.
This is the struggle. Because we have a character that is thinking so elaborately in the beginning, when he's actually doing these things, do I believe that it's happening? Is he battling sharks with his suitcase? Is he really, like, skateboarding through Iceland? Like, that feels just as fantastical. And I think the movie is, on some level, trying to advocate that you can live your fantasies. No one should try this. This is not accurate.
No. No. It really hurts at the end, and we'll get there. But yes, that's the thing is, I'll admit this. After about 10 minutes of his travels, I paused the movie, went to Wiki. I had to know if this was going to be a This Is All a Dream movie or not. Mm-hmm. And I was happy to see it wasn't. And then I returned to the movie. But I really felt like, wow, this is a really prolonged fantasy sequence compared to like the 2 to 3 minute ones we've seen in the past.
I agree. When we see that he's good at the skateboard, but Cheryl is looking away and only the kid sees it, I'm like, is he that good? Does he have superpowers? For a movie that asked us to indulge in daydreams, suddenly that blurring between the lines is, I don't know. Yes, he had a mohawk, and I guess we can intuit that he probably did know how to do these moves, but does that mean his 42-year self can still be that good? It's confusing, and I wish we didn't have the elaborate fantasies to make it so muddy.
The way this movie goes, we didn't need these fantasies in the beginning. It does murk up a lot because we have them.
I think because Ben Stiller is a sketch comedian, you talked about his old variety show. He just can't stop himself. Like, he's like, I'm going to do a Benjamin Button joke. And so, like, you have these moments.
The worst prolonged play out Benjamin Button skit. Ugh, that straight from SNL.
Yeah, it definitely feels like that's not a fantasy Walter Mitty is having. That's Ben Stiller making a joke about a Brad Pitt film we all saw.
I didn't, and I hope never to.
Yeah, you don't need to see it.
But the setup is good here. Like, there's a lot of going on that is overbaked, but I do like the idea of a missing photo negative and the man that has always been developing it, using it to trace to the man that took that photo, I think is a compelling, I want to see that story get started. And so it's just unfortunate that we've got to get, you know, he's got to set up the love affair, the mom's piano thing. Cheryl, she's a mystery fan, so she's sort of helping it in the beginning here. She's at least found out that checks are sent to Sean all over the world. Who does that? Like, we don't know where you're going to be, so we're going to send out 5 different checks.
2013, there's direct deposit.
Yeah, I don't get it. But at any rate, the point is they have a little juxtaposition epiphany. Like, she says one of the checks got mailed to Greenland, and he determines from an enlargement of photograph number 24 that shimmering water is of a boat that's been spotted outside Greenland, I believe is what gets said. So he thinks that is enough serendipity for him to say, I'm going to jump on a plane and go find it. Plus, he's in trouble at work. If his boss sees him again and he doesn't have that photo 25, he's going to get canned. So he might as well leave the country.
And I keep thinking I'm a step ahead of this damn movie because she's like, well, one check went to New Jersey and one check went to Greenland. And I'm like, he's in New Jersey. He was taking photos at the Time Life building and he's in New Jersey. This guy's going to go to Greenland and is going to be the Wizard of Oz. I shouldn't have looked any further than in my own backyard is where I think this is going.
You call that out like a cliche, but that's the weirdness of this movie. On one hand, it's saying, don't live in your head, go out into the world and experience it. And on the other hand, I feel like the message ends up being, you don't need to go anywhere to fall in love. It's right there in front of your eyes.
But here's the part where, again, we get that pandering or over-explanation. One, they're going to tell us what Space Oddity is all about, so we understand that scene later on, in case you don't know who David Bowie is. And then we're going to get the life motto plastered all over the scenery as he travels to Greenland.
Isn't this move where he actually leaves the country to go to Greenland? Is that too abrupt a character turn for you guys as it is for me? Because to me, I'm like, wait, this did not take much prodding. It felt like he was just itching for a reason.
Yes. I mean, I think that's true. I think this character, on one hand, because he's being called all the time by the eHarmony operator who says, you have nothing on your profile. And I think he's at a crossroads in his life. He realizes he's lived a long time, but doesn't have much to show for it. What he has to show are other people's photographs. So, yes. The opportunity to go to a new, exciting foreign country, Greenland. How many people go to Greenland of all places? Like, I do think it's an excuse. But again, the way I see this movie is Sean Penn is encouraging him to follow his inner bliss by following me. Because you love my work, you wanted to live my life, and now this is an opportunity for you to do that.
Except these two have never met. O'Connell has no idea that Walter Mitty is this daydreaming nerd.
But clearly he does because he already took that photo.
That's what I'm saying, that like, get rid of the Walter Mitty stuff and like fix all this other stuff with Sean the photographer and all that, because that does feel like that's the film. Here's this man that's been across the world and now he's going to pull this bookworm, this guy that's in a dark room all day, out into the sunlight and put him on an adventure. I feel like that is the movie, not fantasies.
I agree. The Walter Mitty is getting in the way. What we need from Walter Mitty is not working from what's good about this story.
Agreed. And once he gets on the trip, though, it does become a lot more straightforward. And you know what the film is. Each different scene is going to be him pushing his limits a little further, a little further. But once I checked Wiki to make sure it wasn't all a dream, I knew at least we were grounded now. I was surprised that the fantasies just went away after the one he has in Greenland about the helicopter.
I have a different take on that. Like, I can't tell whether things are real or not. I'm like, was that a fantasy? When he gets a fight in the bar, like, that was so bizarre. I'm like, is that real?
He's going to be murdered by a karaoke singer. Is that real? I was wondering the same thing, Stuart.
Yeah, when the sharks come for him, I keep going, oh, this is just another example of him riding down the street on the concrete skis. Like, it's weird when I finally realize, oh, he's actually doing it, because I can't make a distinction between the fantasies and him living this robust life here in Act Two.
Yeah, if you could have done something with the fantasies earlier on, this it's just going to prolong the film, so I don't want it done. But like, yeah, he has some fantasy with a shark, and then he learns what a real encounter with a shark is like or something. Like, those fantasies at the beginning feel so disconnected by the adventures he's actually going to go on. Look, I don't want this little kitty, everything's going to be parallel, but I feel like you got to do something. Something tying these fantasies into what his journey is.
And he gets into that fight, recognizes the dude's thumb.
Stupid.
As the thumb from one of the photographs. Yeah, that is stupid. And, well, stupid's a harsh term, but yes, it's...
it's stupid.
Convenient.
Unlikely.
Yes, right. Contrivance of the screenplay.
But then he gets on the chopper, and when they get there, I thought they'd land on the boat. He has to jump out of the chopper. Okay, it's pushing his boundaries. I'm good with all of this. Oh, we're going to have this really doofy joke. He's jumping out of the wrong side of the helicopter. That was a little too far.
I was worried about this radio gear. Even if he jumped out of the right side of the helicopter, he's supposed to land in that little dinghy of a boat. That didn't seem like a great plan.
Toss the parts, then jump.
Lower them down on a rope so like they could get them for sure without them going into the ocean.
The guy was intoxicated. The point is, this pilot is not making good choices.
Nor is this film.
Normally, he would have just flown by and thrown down the part. But because the guy was there, he's like, oh, you can just take it with you. I mean, yes, is that a joke? I don't feel like it's a ha 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 laugh out loud joke. Maybe a smirk joke.
It felt to me like it was supposed to be slapsticky. I mean, this movie's uneven, so Ben Stiller going for a slapstick joke did not seem outside of the realm.
Yeah, and when you get him talking about a porpoise, they're going for real broad comedy here that I'm not enjoying.
Yeah, I think tonally it's seeking to find that balance between the shtick and the Peter Sellers smart. And yeah, I mean, I'm not mad at it. It sounds like you guys are getting mad. That's the only difference. I'm feeling like I wasn't even thinking about laughing.
Are you engaged? Are you interested to see where this goes? Because I'm just kind of annoyed by it.
No. I think this, the middle of the movie, now that we're finally on the voyage, I am enjoying it. I just feel like there was so much setup to get him going. It's a relief to know that he's out there on some kind of quest. Although, again, I'm just baffled by, are these moments really happening? Or what I recognize is he's losing his identity. He, in the first one, I think his suit gets ripped up. In this one, he uses the briefcase to hit the shark and he loses that. The next one, when he gets to shore, he'll have to tear up his tie and use that to put rocks on his hand so he can skate really well down the highway. We're seeing him lose whatever that nebbish darkroom identity is so that he can become that Latin fantasy man with ice in his beard. Like he's actually going to self-actualize. That's an exciting idea that it comes through in fits and starts.
Yeah. You say I sound angry. I'm not angry at this film. The only problem is my dermatologist told me I have a high sensitivity to schmaltz and it can cause a really bad rash. And so the schmaltz of this film is irritating, but overall, I'm having a good time. Ben Stiller is an actor I like to watch on screen. And so I don't feel he has great range. I don't feel like he's stretching for this part. He's playing the same character he does, but in like a different key. He's a little bit more low key versus a little more neurotic as I've normally seen him. But I'm enjoying this primarily for something you said very early on, Stuart. This is a gorgeous movie.
Mm-hmm.
Between each of these little adventures, you're getting these panoramic vistas of the ocean or of Iceland and just these great tourist shots that are absolutely just amazing to see. It's a stunning film that's keeping me visually engaged. At no point am I angry. I just, you know, I gotta poke fun at the dumb kid.
Yeah, I mean, Stiller should make a promotional tourist video for Iceland. Like, that's what he should do with his directorial skills, because that's the strength of this film.
And it's probably the DP.
I mean, I don't know. I'm with the film. This is the part where I'm with the film the most, is when he's out there trying to self-actualize and living in a Life magazine photo shoot. Like, everything looked amazing. And it just is kind of over too soon. Like, that's what's weird. It's like, this is where I thought he would find himself. And it feels like such a little interlude. Like, okay, so basically, he goes to Greenland, meets a drunk helicopter pilot, jumps in the ocean, gets taken ashore on this boat that mysteriously has his favorite clementine cake, foreshadowing of the fact that Sean Penn has already visited his mother. And then when he gets there, he hops on a bike and then later a skateboard to reach an erupting volcano that, again, there's Sean Penn. He should be like, there's my guy. I'm that close.
Yeah, just wait at the airport for him to come back.
And he gives up. He gets a text that everyone's being laid off and he goes back to New York.
A couple of things. One, what midlife crisis was Ben Stiller, not Walter Mitty, but Ben Stiller going through for this skateboarding scene? Like, to me, this is cringe. This 40-year-old man tying up his hands like he's Josh Brolin in the movie Thrasher to do some extreme skateboarding, like these long, this is the stuff I hate.
All right, tell me more. Why are you hating this? Because I think this is maybe the most lovely image in the entire movie.
Lovely image? I'm not going to disagree with you there. I get it that we saw him on a skateboard earlier, but it's the way with the alternative chanting music that, you know, everyone, we're all in harmony going, and it feels like, look, guys, we won an Oscar. Look how pretty this is, and the soundtrack, and it's gorgeous. It doesn't feel authentic. I don't feel like I'm actually watching a man going through a midlife crisis or trying to find himself, especially when you end up at a Papa John's. You know, you guys did not talk about Papa John's enough in your Uncharted review. I don't know why there's a whole fight sequence at a Papa John's.
Oh, we talked about it a lot.
Not a lot. No, it should have been the whole review. I don't know why Papa John's is popping up in all these movies, but like, that's where it all ends.
Because they pay. But you know what? I like that scene a lot because it is the one thing he was actually good at was skating. It's like the one skill he had, and he's able to utilize it there. I thought it was a cool scene as far as that went. But I think you've forgotten, Jacob, that in 2013, this is what all the music sounded like, is this kind of choral, chanty. I mean, even Pink made a song that sounded like this around that time. She jumped on that bandwagon.
Unless you're Spike Jonze doing Where the Wild Things Are, I don't want to hear it in the whole soundtrack.
I kind of liked that as a throwback. God, it's been almost 10 years. And so to me, it took me back to the Lumineers and all of those bands at the time that were having all the hits with the sound like this. And yeah, you know what? I think the Lumineers is the band that eventually sold their song to Farmers Insurance. And yes, this looks like an insurance ad to me. A gorgeously shot, a guy on a skateboard insurance ad.
And I just want to point out, like, this is Ben Stiller. Like, yes, he was on a wire, but they had a rig on a car, and he was actually on that skateboard riding that. This is not blue screen stuff. He actually performed those stunts.
There was a skateboard stunt double for some of it.
Yeah, for the behind the, yeah, back shots.
Well, I'm sure for like maybe some of the longer shots, but when you see him up close, this is not blue screen work. And I think you feel that again, this moment, again, it's so tactile. Yes. What we're supposed to be understanding is this is a buttoned up character that has gotten stodgy and had to think about work too young and is now thinking about the youth and the, you know, vacation of Europe and everything that he was supposed to do that he didn't get to enjoy because of his dad.
Why did he make this character turn again to start looking at all of this? So that's the one thing I'm still missing.
Why did he start thinking about who he was?
Yeah, why did he decide to go to Greenland? Why did he decide to suddenly change his life after so long?
Because he always wanted to travel, and this fear of being fired at work, the responsible thing, is a motivator for him to indulge in the fantasies of youth he didn't get to enjoy because of it, of the dad.
Doesn't this seem more like a character who's had a psychotic break and is now fleeing the country?
I don't agree with that, but I do agree that where this movie should spend its time is not with Benjamin Button gags and going down the sidewalk in elaborate chase scenes from Scott Pilgrim or what have you.
Total Recall X-ray scene, we'll get to it.
Yes, right, yes. There's a lot of things that this movie is distracted by, but actually getting to know this character, a more mature director would be able to focus more directly, not on gags and bits and special effects shots, and more on what was happening internally with this character. And I wish that we could follow Mitty more. I wish I knew him better. I have to infer a lot, and that's not great that this movie makes me do that.
And I did think this was going to be a big, long travelogue, but as you pointed out earlier, we're going to go back to New York now and spend some time in New York again, like not doing travel, not doing fantasies, just like we want to be out in the world. This should have just all been about trying to find Sean without this distraction.
Yeah, you don't go back.
Except he has to throw away the wallet.
In a place that it could still be returned to him.
Yes.
Yes, exactly. Yes, that's the contrivance. And in fact, I guess this is also his opportunity to, I don't know, is he going to ask Cheryl out or invite her to move in with him? Like, she loses her job, so he feels like he's, well, he's got the skateboard that, I don't know, there's a lot of half reasons why he's like going to her and then like decides not to find out what happened when her ex-lover appears at the door. But I feel like this whole return to New York is an unnecessary speed bump to what should have been an international travelogue of self-discovery.
Agreed. It really kills the pacing.
Yeah. This is where we find out that one of the photos is mom's piano and that Sean had come to visit her. That's why the Clementine cake was on the boat, was that he took some for the road. And she's able, because she talked to him, she knows that some of the things he wrote on the wrapper involved him going to talk to Afghanistan warlords. And so he now has the mystery solved enough to know. Again, he was there in Iceland. He saw the dude on the wing of a plane. I don't know why, if that was the point, was to find Sean, I don't know why he gave up so quickly to return home. That part was lame. But now he knows where Sean is.
Yeah, wait at the runway, because if I see the word warlord and go and find out my mom baked this guy a cake, I wouldn't put together, oh yeah, he's going to use the cake to bribe his way with warlords to get into Afghanistan. Like, I don't even know where you begin to create an itinerary for that journey to find the warlords. Like, there's got to be lots of warlords. Like, this is crazy.
Yeah. You got to either roll with it or not. I'm choosing to roll with it. I find the warlord to be amusing. When he goes for the broad comedy, it feels like he's making one movie. And when he goes for the slow, quiet introspection, it feels like he's making another movie. And the two just didn't quite come together in editing. It's like when he starts going back out to the Himalayas and he's getting hit across the face with those sticks. It's like, that's supposed to be really funny, but it's also supposed to be like a rebaptism of sorts.
I also think a lot about, again, and this is getting back to what I was saying earlier about wanting to get to know Walter Mitty, is the lessons they hammered into me in film school about montage. And like, you just don't overuse that, because you'll never get close to a character if their whole sense of discovery, this is supposed to be a trip where he learns who he is, you know, maybe grows that mohawk back and like finds out like what he lost when he had to be the responsible parental figure thrust into that role by his dad's death. But this is all montage to music, like it's music video. And that's not movie making. That's not storytelling. That's not character revealing. That is shorthand. And I think that this movie suffers because they're taking the important parts and making them music videos and then spending all of that extra time on gags and stuff that really don't serve the themes.
Maybe that's why it has to be so obvious when it gets to those themes. We're finally going to find Sean, and he's there. He's trying to get a picture of a snow leopard. And you know what? Sometimes you just look at it. Sometimes you don't take that picture. Just like when you go to see a live band, everyone's holding up their phones. Put them down and enjoy the moment, you Zoomers.
Uh-huh.
Like, let's just lecture everyone, because, yeah, if it's montage, we can't actually learn anything through observing things through interactions. Like, we got to be told what this is about.
You've got a guy there with a $25,000 camera lens on a $5,000 camera body.
I knew you'd know the price.
And using still film, oh, by the way, not a digital camera. That's an old film camera from the 90s. And he wants to just enjoy the moment. He doesn't want to take the picture, let alone put a digital screen in there. This is where it's hitting you over the head with the live your life, not post it to Instagram message.
The Instagram tag you're putting at the end of that makes it sound like it's criticizing people that are living that way.
It is.
I think what looking at what this story is telling me, this is a man that respects the guy in the dark room. I'm only able to do this because you have diligently sacrificed your life to expose mine. And now as a gift, I am giving you the opportunity to enjoy what I have enjoyed. That's the way I see it.
He doesn't even expose the film, though. Like, he's not even, he's an archiver. He archives negatives. Like, he doesn't even bring Sean's photos to life.
Well, that's the way that they've written it, that he believes, I thought he did develop them.
Oh, he says at the beginning he's like a negative assets manager.
Uh-huh. I never see him in a dark room. I never see him develop. What he was sent was pre-developed negatives.
Okay, well, that does change things.
Yeah.
Because I do believe, like, it was, here's a man in the light asking someone in the dark that has helped him.
No, that's a great metaphor.
I see this as a secret sharer other self, like father-son relationship even, maybe. But Sean is telling Walter, come with me, I want to show you what you've missed by only looking at the photograph. That's what I see. I don't feel like it's, people shouldn't do this. That would be hypocritical for him to say, how can you take pictures? This is the man's work. But he was wanting to do this as a favor to someone that had done a lot of good for him.
Yeah, I still can't tell the way Sean Penn plays it. I think that that's shock. And by the way, out of everything Walter Mitty does, the walking alone through the Himalayas is death. He will die there. He will not find Sean O'Connell. He will be found in 100 years as a feasted upon set of bleach white bones. My father did a little bit of the Everest climb, just a little bit, just to the point where you start needing oxygen if you're old like he was. And do you know how long he had to train just to do that little bit? He had to train stateside to even do that. And then, much like Walter Mitty here, he had two little people to carry his load with him.
Sherpas.
Yeah, this is where I, like, this has to all be in his head, because there's no way your guides just leave you and you continue walking aimlessly at 18,000 feet and survive.
I didn't understand that either. Why? It seemed like he was saying he wanted to go alone, right?
No, he was saying you, they're pointing. It's all talk. He's like, you go with me. And they're like, no. You go alone. No, you go with me.
What Sherpa would be afraid to go to Everest?
That's what they get paid for.
Right. Yeah. They do it 100 times.
Yeah, apparently he hired the worst two Sherpas in all of the Afghan Himalayas.
I don't even care about those logistics. Again, if this was a successful film for me, I would have been into this journey. It's the fact that, like, it's the ghost cat, and we're going to let it remain that way, and we're going to reconnect with the people of the land and play soccer with them. And look, you could do this in a successful way. They're not doing it. For me, this feels contrived and pandering and schmaltzy, and I don't like that. I don't like sentimentality.
I'll say this. Sean O'Connell is very chill about that wallet being thrown away. He at first seems a little hurt, like, why would you throw the wallet away? But he gets over it pretty fast when he wants to play a game of soccer.
Yeah, again, I think that he, you know, it's just a moment lost in time. For him, the point is, I lived it. So whether you got to see it or not, oh well, but I've had a fulfilling life because I've gone out there and experienced it face to face. And that's the difference.
I wish the movie could have showed and not told us that.
Okay. I mean, I like the sentiment okay. And I think on some level, sometimes it works. Does this moment feel unearned? Well, it feels like this journey hasn't been as revealing, at least for the audience, as it should have been. We should have stayed on Walter and not been distracted so much. And maybe this would feel meaningful, but I think you forget about the fact that Walter was the guy that helped Sean be so great. I think you lose the thread of whatever they're trying to say. So yeah, they state it rather clumsily here at the end. We're basically at the climax. He's going back home.
We end this in a Total Recall joke, him getting beat up by security.
Yeah. But yeah, it's very awkward here. And so maybe the most awkward is the fact that he's become friends with his eHarmony. Patton Oswalt has been calling him throughout the movie to say how impressed he is that his profile pictures are now filled with sharks and, you know, world traveling adventure. And now they're going to have a Cinnabon together.
How many people called eHarmony after this that, like, had an account and got thrown in jail to come bail them out and pick them up? Like, eHarmony is just going to come and get you out of airport security?
Yeah, I don't know.
If you walk the Himalayas alone, yes.
Todd will come get you.
I'm just being pedantic, and it shows I'm not fully into this movie, but how did he get cell signal in the Himalayas?
I mean, you know. This is just a fantastical movie. I'll go with that one. I thought it was actually a funny joke that he's like, I have to make oxygen choices.
That was good.
I would have laughed harder if he said, I'm paying international minutes for this call.
But here's the thing. So the point is that all these people that I've known abstractly, a man that's just a voice on the telephone, I'm now going to get to know at an airport or something. But what happens by them meeting?
Nothing.
What happens by him meeting Sean?
Patton Oswalt got a paycheck. Like, that's it.
His stuff is going away from virtuality. He was talking on the phone. Now we're meeting in person. And he was winking at her on eHarmony. Now he's going to talk to her in person. It's, again, live the moment. Don't let electronics be in the middle.
let me be clear. I completely understand that. What happens by meeting face to face that wasn't happening on the phone?
His bail was paid.
Yeah. Why is that so much better? You have to demonstrate that. You can't just say one A is better than B. We have to understand why it's fulfilling that they actually get to see one another.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have an answer fully for that. Yeah.
You get my point. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, let's get to the end here. We're almost there. So, yes, he ends up, a very minor subplot was that he couldn't figure out what to do with the piano that his dad wanted his mom to have. And they finally agreed to sell it because, well, he's run through his finances. And this is where mom tells him, oh, yeah, I have your wallet. You don't think she knew? You don't think, like, this was all part of, like, Sean's game?
Nope.
I feel like that's what the movie should have been, and there's hints of that, but no, ultimately that's not what they filmed.
It's hard to know. Again, because this movie's so choppy, and I've had problems defining reality from fantasy anyway, maybe that's the point. Maybe that's the aspiration, is that you can read different things into the ambiguity.
Are you reading anything good, though, with all those different readings? Like,
I mean, there's good moments in this movie, absolutely.
Moments, yeah, correct, moments.
Yeah, but is it satisfying that she suddenly has the wallet? No, that feels cheap. And the fact that he just goes and returns it without looking inside, just so he can tell off Adam Scott.
Yeah, so Adam Scott's, his character is just there to do the layoffs, right? But it seems like he's like, I need that negative. Like, he's the one that's going to choose that cover. Like, they're discussing the cover, like, in a board meeting when Walter walks in. I don't see him using this negative. Oh, this jerk that I fired and I don't like, I'm going to put him on the cover. And why would anyone care about this cover if you haven't just watched this movie for the last 2 hours?
Yeah. It seems unlikely that this is what they would go to print with, even if it's what the photojournalist they respect wanted. It wouldn't be what the editors, who have the final say, would actually print. But the metaphor is that this was a character who didn't even know the life motto, who was suddenly making editorial choices, who was going to print a black screen on the cover.
The end of life.
And no, what should be talked about are the people that made life. I don't know. It's a very mixed message here, but it certainly allows Ben Stiller to feel pious and self-righteous and tell off this guy that we don't like that he's awful.
In a way that is so confrontational as to surely not sink in, but it's all about Walter Mitty's actualization, not about Adam Scott.
Yeah, and if you want to see the metaphor of it, he's telling off life online. You know, he worked for life. Now it's become life online. He's not going to have that. You know, like, I am going to live. When we see him applying for jobs, yes, he's doing it on the computer, but he's not at home the way he was at the beginning of the movie. He's in a cafe surrounded by people. So again, that sort of demonstrates, sort of, but not really, the messages that they're kind of sometimes getting at. Again, I want to ask, what is the message of this movie? I thought the message of this movie many times is go out and live life. Don't allow it to be mediated to you. But then I also feel here at the end, when him finding out that, like, it was Cheryl all along and he didn't have to go and do any of this to impress her, that she missed him, wanted to know where he was. I feel like this is a Wizard of Oz ending and not at all saying you need to go have an adventure.
I took it as what Sean Penn said. Sometimes you just want to live the moment, get out from behind the virtual screen, get out of your house and go live as it is. So, and that he's doing that at the end with Cheryl, that he sees her while picking up his severance. They go, find out that the reason he'd seen her husband there previously, or her ex-husband, is because he was fixing the refrigerator, because in 2013, women still need men for that.
Who fixes their refrigerator? I don't care if you're a man or a woman. The only man or woman showing up to fix it is the Maytag man.
We're getting so hung up on these small choices. You know what it is? Like, we're getting so mad at these small choices. This movie gets itself in trouble so much by making these bizarre little choices that, like, I want to give it to you, but then now that you've told me he's not in a dark room and not developing the film, like, I'm angry about this. What? That was the whole thing. Like, you made my photos better. Well, then what did he do?
That's what I'm telling you. They screwed up the metaphor. Like, whatever the metaphor is, I don't know what it is, but they messed it up.
Yeah. Okay. I'm feeling you guys' frustration. I'm not always angry about the things you're angry about, but this movie does really get lost in the weeds. And yes, I guess if it's got a feel-good ending, it's about the fact that Cheryl is available and willing to go off with a Walter Mitty that I guess sort of looks like Indiana Jones fronting the Strokes. And they can play the Pina Colada song, Jack Johnson's version.
So Jacob Stewart. I'm actually really curious, Jacob. Do you recommend The Secret Life of Walter Mitty? You've been pretty negative, but yet I've seen you pull out of nosedives steeper than this one.
Well, look, I actually, this is one of the first early reviews, like, where I wrote down my thoughts on Letterboxd for this one. And those thoughts had always stuck with me. Like, I felt when I first watched this, this was very branded with eHarmony and Papa John's and Life. Like, just like, yeah, let's bring in all those brands to get some money. And it's very slick and looks good, but it feels tame and safe. We want to go for an Oscar. We want to please everyone. Ultimately, I felt that it was soullessly slick, because it's a good looking film. I gave it 2.5 out of 5 stars on Letterboxd when I watched it way back then. And yeah, I would stick with that. So it's like right on the line, because visually it's cool. And like, there are some neat ideas. Like, I kind of like Ben Stiller's as Walter Mitty, his backstory when we finally get there at Papa John's in Iceland. Like, I wish I could feel for him earlier in the film and really want to go on that journey with him. The problem is, this is kind of a mess of a film. Like, watching it this time, like, again, slick, I wouldn't think of all these problems, but watching it this time now, where why are we having these fantasies? What do they have to do with what goes on later? What is the relationship with Sean? It needs another rewrite, probably needs a different director. I just don't feel like this is the kind of thing Stiller would probably succeed at. So I know I've kind of come out because sounding angry, because it hits a lot of those things that I just don't like. Like I said, sentimentality, and it feels pandering. But if you just want a nice travelogue, maybe you can enjoy this. Like, there is some beautiful shots of a volcano. So no, I'm not going to recommend you see this. It's a mild not recommend.
Stuart.
I'm going to recommend it, but I'm going to agree with most everything you said, Jacob.
That makes me more angry than the movie that you're going to recommend.
Yeah, no, I feel like it was easy enough to watch. Like, I didn't really get upset. Like, yes, I get frustrated, and I make a distinction between that. I don't get angry. I'm not mad that this movie makes the choices I did. I'm frustrated that it can look so great in the moment and then not come together, not cohere, not coalesce into a vision. You guys have used the word schmaltzy. I don't have a problem with the themes. I think, if anything, is that it can't stay on theme. Like, it really did need another rewrite in order to make the themes more concrete, more clear. I don't care whether they're schmaltzy or not. I just want to be able to follow what it's asking me. Sometimes it's advocating being extroverted, and sometimes it's trying to say, oh, you don't need to go anywhere. Like, your reality is right outside your door. And I just, what is this about? I think they're close. They have such great camera work. They have, you know, a talented cast. I'm glad you cited Kristen Wiig as good Arnie. I think she is a nice foil for Ben Stiller. She helps us like Walter Mitty because she likes Walter Mitty. I like him too here. There's good things in this movie. It may not be a great movie. It's not as good as you want it to be. But, I mean, yeah, I had a good enough time superficially watching it. But it's a shame, because I feel like this could have been an Oscar-winning movie. It could have been Forrest Gump. It really could have been a fairy tale with heart, like Being There. The Peter Sellers movie he aspired to is only about 40% here. And then there's a lot of other stuff, too, that just needed to be pruned. So while it shows a lot of promise, I'm going to vote Green Arrow for that. I do think that it is ultimately a pretty forgettable daydream.
And I just don't know anymore. Coming in, I thought I knew what I was going to say. I watched the film, and it certainly had an air of false emotionalism that I dislike. You see, understand, I like Forrest Gump, and I understand that movie schmaltzy. And I like even Mr. Holland's Opus, which I understand is very schmaltzy.
Okay, that is schmaltzy. Yeah. That movie deserves schmaltzy. Forrest Gump, just because you're sentimental doesn't make you schmaltzy.
And yet, both of those films, I feel, were better character studies than this one was. I think once you pointed out the montage, Stuart, I think that even though both those films had their montages, we spent a lot more time getting to know those characters than we ever get a chance to know Walter Mitty outside of how he sees himself during some super-powered fights. But in the end, this was harmless, affable. I sort of liked the message, put down the cell phones. I mean, get off my lawn, Zoomers, but every so often, not everything needs to go on TikTok. So I walked away from this film being like, it's everything I thought it would be, and yet it went down easier than I thought it would. But then we spend the past 90 minutes just ripping on the film, and I've tried to call out the good things as I went, the good scenery, Kristen Wiig impressing me with her performance. I actually like the romance between the two characters, but yeah, this is just so trite. But I'm going to go with my original watching it instinct, and while I've allowed myself to kind of kick this film a little bit, I could give it a recommend. I mean, it did go down easily enough. It's harmless. This is kind of like the movie I'd crack out when my grandparents came over, which is how I originally watched Mr. Holland's Opus, by the way, is we were having a family discussion. The grandparents are coming over. We're watching a movie. What kind of movie can we find that's literally good for the whole family? Something that's not going to offend them. No sex, no violence, but yet not going to bore everybody else. And I think this would fit that bill, and I wouldn't have too awful a time. It's not the greatest, but yeah. I'll give it a pass. I liked enough about it.
Yeah, it has interesting ideas, and then it has other ideas. And that's always a frustration, right? Is when you see a better movie than it ends up being. And that's, I guess, it allows me to be positive, is I can look at the good stuff and say I like that and not be infuriated by what doesn't work, like the Benjamin Button.
Agreed.
And see, every time you mention something like that, it just makes me, not recommend.
I know. I feel like you didn't want what this movie was doing at all. And so the fact that it did it in such a half-assed way is only going to make you angrier.
Yes.
But I do want to again thank Matthew for picking this film. It was an interesting conversation. And even if we may not have loved the film as much as you did. But we have another listener pick next month, and wow, I love the patron picks because you never know where we're going next. We're going to take a hard left turn to as far away from Walter Mitty as possible.
Well, I don't know. There's some daydreams in it for sure. It's Scarlett Johansson under the skin, showing some skin, and doing some crazy stuff.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of stuff where you're not sure if it's real or not in that one.
For sure. It's an A24 sci-fi movie. In the vein of The Man Who Fell to Earth. And we're going to review it next week. Next week is next month. And so in time for the new Doctor Strange movie, we'll see Scarlett at her strangest.
Hard to believe 1 year since Black Widow. And we're reviewing this. It's a far cry. So thank you again, Matthew. Thank you to all of our patrons, every single one of you, for being a supporter of Now Playing. We would not be able to keep this show going without you, and it means the world to us. And, you know, we're going to be showing that because you're going to be getting a couple of extra bonus podcasts for being a patron later throughout the summer. So, Jacob Stewart, thank you for joining me, and thanks for listening to Now Playing. Testing the limits of the human spirit.
You have a profile now. Congratulations.
Thank you to all the listeners who have backed us through our crowdfunding campaign, and we hope you've enjoyed this special bonus movie review podcast.
Heard rumblings, life's done.
And a special thanks to Matthew for his support of the show and for picking The Secret Life of Walter Mitty for our hosts to review.
You're the bravest man I've ever known.
The opinions expressed on Now Playing are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the opinion of Venganza Media Incorporated.
I see what you're saying. The cover, I should have been more straightforward.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with the motion pictures reviewed or otherwise referred to herein. All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review and no infringement is intended.
Hey, this is a place of business, not a place of jelly man toys.
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of Venganza Media Incorporated and may not be used without the expressed written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
Just nestle in here and die.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2022, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
I'll see you on Sesame Street, man.
Kristen Wiig, Shirley MacLaine, Adam Scott. In my notes, I just keep having Adam Schiff. I have to remember it's Adam Scott.
That would be weird.
I just got the names flipped.
Exciting foreign country. Greenland. How many people go to Greenland of all places? Like,
didn't you?
No, I went to Iceland.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Definitely want to go to Iceland before Greenland.
I mean, when I'm stuck in LA traffic, I imagine that my car can fly and I could just get past it all.
I don't know about you, but I always have the superpower I want when I go to Comic-Con is to be the juggernaut. And I have fantasies.
Just run through people.
Of just ramming through the fucking crowds and just pushing them all out of my way and nobody can get in my way.
There's a lot of strange fantasies going on at Comic-Con, though.
Okay, but this one's not sexual.
You're ramming through people. I don't know.
Okay, Zero Effect is what I'm talking about, the small ones. Zero Effect, Flirting with Disaster.
Permanent Midnight?
No, I didn't see that one.
Oh, okay.
No one saw that one.
I saw that one.
Only Artie did.
It was about Alf.
But, like, this is one fantasy that I can identify with this. I have played this scenario out very many times in my head when interacting with a manager or supervisor. There was one time I did lose it and told a district manager off. It felt good.
Did you still have a job the next day?
I was shocked that I actually got promoted.
Sometimes it works for you. Sometimes you get respect.
Oh, my God. You're living in Office Space. That guy has management material all over him.
It was. I went home and I'm like, I think I lost my job today. But no, I got promoted.